Good evening. This is the February 6th, 2020 regular meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board. We're meeting in the Veterans Memorial Building here in Morro Bay. And we have a quorum. All the members are here this evening. And so we'll call the meeting to order. And a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Into the spirit of the thing, you know? Okay, so our next agenda item is the Chair Advisory Board Member and Liaison Announcements and Presentations. So this evening we have Lexi Bell, the Executive Director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program here to give us an update. Also, during this particular portion of the meeting, the agenda, our City Council liaison is going to take us through an update, the most recent update from City Council for the Advisory Body's Handbook and Bylaws. So before we do that, let's give the board an opportunity if anybody has any announcements. Dana?
Yes, I have an announcement. This is in regards to taking a safe boating class put on here by our local Coast Guard Auxiliary. This Saturday is the first one that they're going to be doing, and then they have another one on June 13th that they're going to be doing. These are both at the Morro Bay Yacht Club. Joe Fram is a member of the Yacht Club, but he's also part of the Auxiliary Coast Guard, and our Coast Guard Auxiliary. And so you can actually get your safe boating card, which eventually everyone will have to get to be on the waters here in California. I don't have the times, but you can reach for registration. You can call 805-235-6690. I could give you the email address, but that would be harder to remember. So 805-235-6690. And then also on recreational boating, at the end of the month, we have a college regatta called the Mustang Regatta. This is Cal Poly Sailing. They put this on every year, and they have about 14 colleges that participate. It's quite the event. They do a really good job, and everybody, of course, loves coming to Morro Bay.
Before you sign off, how are the Sailing Foundation's calendar sales going?
Calendar sales have gone very well this year. I noticed that I have to explain what a tide calendar is.
Wow.
And that these calendars are worthwhile to buy all year long, you know, if you still want to know what's going on. You know, it shows you the days where, yeah, this is going to be easy paddling in my canoe. Or on this day, I won't have to paddle at all if I start here. Current will take me this way at that time and come back this way. But a lot of people just don't understand that. So I've been informing people, and they sell when we do that.
And very briefly, the proceeds go to what and how do people purchase one?
Okay. The proceeds go to the Morro Bay Youth Sailing Foundation. And this is an organization, a nonprofit organization that promotes sailing among youth, Cal Poly or college students on down in our county. And Morro Bay Yacht Club has a junior program, and the Morro Bay Yacht Club also facilitates Cal Poly, and they own all their boats and let them use the facilities. So it works really good in a couple aspects that way for people donating. One last thing I would like to say is the Maritime Museum has sold a lot of our calendars for us because they have a store and people walk in there, so you can walk in there and get them. Otherwise, you can get them at the Yacht Club. Happy hour on Fridays, the ship store has them available. And one more thing, the museum just recently had a flagpole donated to them by Mr. and Mrs. David Thomas. It is a flagpole with a yard arm, so it has an American flag at the top and a POW flag, MIA flag, and then a California flag off the yard arms. And it really balances out the front of Maritime Museum. So, you know, one more thing to look at the museum. Thank you.
Thank you. Cherise?
Nothing from me to add this evening.
Okay. Mark?
Nothing at this time.
Lynn?
Yeah. I would just briefly like to explain or list some of the activities, the community outreach activities that the Morro Bay Yacht Club promotes and hosts. And among these, other than transient boats, all transient boats are directed toward the yacht club on our dock, and they can tie up there for the night. They have services. Last year, we hosted 181 transient boats coming through with a total number of people, crew aboard those vessels of 414, and the total number of days, that's the number of all of the boats times the number of days that they spent, was 985 days that we had those people and those boats. We also have sailing lessons. These are available to the public from the ages of 8 years old up to when you can't walk anymore. The oldest student that we have had come through our sailing lessons was 81 years old. That was a number of years ago. But last year, 110 students went through the sailing program. Dana mentioned the Cal Poly sailing team. We have 11 boats for the Cal Poly sailing team. They have a place to store them. They do their own maintenance on those boats, but we host their practice sessions. They're there 2 to 3 days a week at the height of the season. And in the very beginning, during WOW week, they'll have about 50 kids who come through wanting to try out sailing. By the end of the year, there's probably 15 to 20 who are still going at it and practicing and sailing. And going out to regattas both at home here in Morro Bay and going to other states. In fact, they went to Hawaii, they went back east to participate in various regattas. And they are improving greatly, having had good practice sessions on Morro Bay. The Morro Bay Junior Yacht Club is also not just for members, it is for the community. And they'll have anywhere from 20 to 40 kids, 40 at the very beginning when everybody is joining new things and kind of gets whittled down through the year to the hardcore members. There'll be 20 to 30 of those. The Yacht Club facility, we have a very nice building, and it is mostly for members, but come Christmas season, various organizations in the city also would like to use it. So the Coast Guard Auxiliary had their children's Christmas party at our facility. The Coast Guard Auxiliary had their Christmas party there, and the city advisory boards were also hosted by the city there, as well as the firemen who came in and used our facility for their Christmas party. The Coast Guard Auxiliary has their monthly meetings in our building as well. So that's most of the things that we do just to pay back the city for the privileges that we have of having our building and our dock.
Lynn, what are the ages for the youth yacht club group?
Junior sailors start at 8 years old, and they can go up to the age of 18. Then the Cal Poly. It's Cal Poly, of course, for the college students. Other kids, once they get to that age, if they like, they can become an associate member, so they don't pay the upfront initiation fee. But if they're still really interested and want to continue sailing, but they do have to have their own boat, they can continue with the yacht club from 18 to 30, as an associate member.
Okay, thank you. Jeremiah?
Yes, good evening. There's not a whole lot to mention today, but we would like to mention that currently there's local crab being delivered here in town, and we hope that everyone will support our guys there and get out and get some of those wonderful Dungeness crab. We also have some very, very nice rock cod, vermilions, picacho, and some swordfish from California, probably from nearby, actually. And it all looks very good. Bought some myself today, as a matter of fact. And also, we spoke to Larry down at the Maritime Museum, or we were happened to be chatting, and he was talking about putting a video of some sort in the museum, not something real long, but something somebody might be interested in watching. And we will continue to talk to him. We have acquired a really, really nice video that's only 38 minutes long, and it's called Around the Horn. Incredible story. So hopefully that'll be playing down there soon. You'll really enjoy it, and hopefully we'll get that, Larry will get that going down there. Looking forward to it. Okay. That's it.
Gene? Yes. We just finished building the Morro Bay Landing. It's 1215 Embarcadero. It's up and running. A Patriots Sport Fishing is up and running there. And the public bathrooms are open. I must say that they are probably the nicest public bathrooms on the entire part of Morro Bay. So if you use them, please respect them.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Lexi, State of the Bay.
Hi, how is everyone doing today? I'm Lexi Bell, for those of you that have met me or those that are watching. I'm the executive director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. And I usually come speak with you all a few different times, but very regularly I come every 3 years to talk about State of the Bay. So this is a report that we work really hard to compile everything we know about how the bay is doing and provide it in a way that is accessible to the public. The goal is for the community to understand the health of the bay and to answer some questions that we receive very often from the community and from the public about our bay. So I thought I would highlight a couple things of most interest to the Harbor Advisory Board, and I provided you copies of the report. If you have more in-depth questions, I'm always happy to come back and present on other things or answer questions by email. We're working on, this is an advanced copy, by the way, we're working on getting a website up and running with the same content plus some additional interactive content online. So when the public comes to our website in a couple weeks, they'll be able to access that. So just for a quick reminder of what the estuary program is, the Morro Bay National Estuary Program is one of 28 programs around the country that are recognized as estuaries of national significance. So this means that we're treated on the same level of importance across our nation as Puget Sound, San Francisco Bay, Santa Monica Bay, Indian River Lagoon in Florida, New York, New Jersey Harbor in New York and New Jersey. So it's a big deal to have that recognition here in Morro Bay, and it speaks to the quality and the value of our bay from an environmental perspective, a water quality perspective, and a community perspective. And there are three main ways that we work to protect and restore the bay. We work to do restoration and conservation work that improve habitats and water quality. We do a lot of research and monitoring to better understand what's happening in the environment and share that information. And then we do a lot of education outreach as a way of sharing that information. So today I thought I'd focus in the report. We have one question about, is the bay safe for swimming? We get this question a lot, and we like to present some information about how we test that and what we know. And so one thing I always want to make sure people understand is that we don't test water quality every single day. So this isn't telling you that the bay is always clean every single day, but as a general rule, the bay on our monthly bacteria testing is meeting water quality standards for swimming. So that's good news. And the reason why we test this is because bacteria in the water can make you sick. So we rely heavily on volunteers to get all this data together and present it to the community. And so here's a few images showing volunteers collecting samples using a specialized sterile method, processing them for a type of bacteria, Enterococcus, and then interpreting those results in the lab. So one other thing the ESHA program is really proud of is that we provide people in the community an opportunity to participate in our science. And we have about 65 regular water quality volunteers that help us collect this data. And so in the report, you'll see that we have this map showing the places that we test monthly. And you can see they're all green dots, which is good. Green is good. So that is an improvement from the 2017 report where we had yellow dots in Los Osos near Pasadena Point and Baywood Pier. So that improvement might be related to the drought conditions we experienced in that time frame and having less stormwater runoff. But nevertheless, it's a good thing for swimming and recreating in the bay. And with this topic, we always try to remind people that even though the water is generally clean in the bay, if you go swimming after a storm, it can still have pollution in it washing down from land. So the general rule of thumb is to try to stay out of the water, not go surfing even though it looks good, 72 hours following a storm to minimize your risk to getting sick. So another aspect of our program where we try to address bacteria is Mutts for the Bay. So that's a program that you'll see all around the city of Morro Bay and the community of Los Osos, where we have a program to provide free pet waste bags for people to pick up after their pets when they're out and about, and encourage that practice at home as well to keep that bacteria from going into the water. And as you know, in Morro Bay, a lot of our parks and recreational areas are really close to the water. So it's important that people pick up all the time. And we provide these free bags and these dispensers. And these are funded by private donors, businesses, and organizations. This is the first year that we've actually had every single dispenser sponsored by an organization or individual. So if you want to sponsor one, you have to get on the wait list. So I'm really excited about that. And we added three more this year. So it's really accessible to pick up after your pet. There's no reason why you shouldn't pick up after your pet. And many people that come and visit Morro Bay will see the signs on the dispensers and come into our office and give us $10 and say, I'm so glad you had those. I didn't have bags or whatever. And people will come in and donate to the program. So it's a great way to get that message out about water quality and caring for our community. We've given out 340,000 bags in 2018. And then the second topic I thought would be of most interest to the Harbor Advisory Board is the eelgrass in the bay. So I've come and talked to the board specifically about eelgrass before. It is one of our questions in the report, how is eelgrass doing? And we're still in an area of concern for eelgrass, but we have a little bit of good news. So you can see in the map on the left, which is from 2007, that's our maximum acreage, which was 344 acres in yellow there. And then on the 2017 map, you can't see very much yellow because we only had about 19 acres of eelgrass. So this was a decade-long decline, and I've come and talked about how the reasons for that decline have been very hard to discern. We've partnered with Cal Poly to do a number of research efforts to try to understand what's happening. And our basic conclusion is that a number of different water quality parameters came together in a negative way to impact eelgrass. And probably one big factor is that we don't have great circulation in the back part of the bay where you can see most of the eelgrass is. And so that circulation pattern coupled with some water quality declines may have caused eelgrass not to be able to hang on, essentially, in those conditions. And so we just did another map in early December, I believe, of 2019, or late November. So in a couple more months, we'll have a new map from 2019, and I can share that with you all. There's some early results from a parallel effort that Cal Poly did. So we think that the number might be around 30 acres, so we may have had a little increase. And certainly people in the community are seeing that and coming by and telling us they're seeing more eelgrass. And certainly we're seeing it with our restoration results. So it feels like there's a positive upswing happening, some improvement in those water quality conditions, and perhaps a shifting in where the eelgrass can best grow. And so that's where our restoration comes in, is trying to find the areas that are most suitable habitat and plant there so that the eelgrass can adapt to some of these conditions. It may have not been able to do that on its own. So here's what it's like to work at the estuary program if you're not the executive director. You get to go out paddleboarding and look for eelgrass and monitor. So this is some images of the monitoring work to make sure we understand what's happening with eelgrass. And then these are some images of our partners doing research. We have research partnership with Cal Poly, funded by Sea Grant and NOAA, and also with Cuesta College. And so this is an opportunity for the college-age students and graduate students to do some research in their backyard and help us better understand what's happening with water quality and circulation and eelgrass in Morro Bay. And then we're actually doing active restoration. So we're transplanting healthy eelgrass from the front part of the bay, primarily near Coleman Beach, where it's doing really well, and also across along the North Sand Spit. And then we're planting that eelgrass using this method. You can see these garden stakes in a quadrat, and monitoring that to see how it's doing. And we're planting in areas that we have determined have good conditions for eelgrass growth. So this is what it looks like when we first plant the eelgrass. It's nicely contained in this 1 meter by 1 meter plot. And this is what one of our plots looks like 2 years later. So you can see where the quadrat originated. So this method has been very successful. It's very time intensive. So we, again, rely on volunteers and skilled staff to make this happen. But it's relatively affordable. And if we can keep doing it year after year, we can start up some of these beds in places that they can be successful and continue to grow on their own. So another thing we do as part of State of the Bay is we have a few public events for public members to come out and hear from not only from us at the estuary program, but from other scientists and experts about how the bay is doing. So in March is our next one, March 5th, at the Slow Botanical Gardens at 6:15. And you can come hear updates from a USGS scientist, a US Geological Survey scientist, on climate change impacts to our area. And then you can hear from a state parks scientist about the status of snowy plovers in our area. And then you can hear from one of our staff members about bay water quality. And we'll have another event in May. And so I'm not sure how to switch to this. Does anybody know how to do that? Oh, help is coming. we have the other dates for other events. And if you go to our website, you can see all the events that will be available for people. So, well, they're really small, but there's a May 7th event on Creek Health, and then we have three guided hikes we're leading, a poetry contest, and a social media challenge about picking up after your pet. So you can get on social media and follow us. That'll be really interesting, I think. And our website is mbnep.org, which is the initials for Morro Bay National Estuary Program, and you can find out all the information about the events there. So anybody has any questions they would like to chat about?
Lynn?
Nope.
Mark?
Is there an overall goal with regard to eelgrass in terms of timing and restoration?
That's a great question, and one that one of our granting agencies keeps asking us. How many acres are you going to plant? And so the research that we're doing with Cal Poly is designed to eventually inform that. What we'd like to be able to do is create, based on their research, what water quality conditions and depth profiles eelgrass needs in a bay that has changed over time as the back bay is filled in. And so we can map out the maximum acres that eelgrass could grow in the current conditions of the bay, which has not been done before. We've only had the maps of where it grew at one time. So sort of forward-looking, what we're calling an eelgrass habitat suitability map. So we're hoping to get to that in the next year or two. In the interim, obviously, the acreage is still really low. So as long as we're choosing sites that meet those parameters on an individual basis, I think we're doing good. But we hope to have that map so that we can have a specific goal. This is where we want to be. And the other thing I would say about that is at some point, the way that we plant, if you noticed, it's I can't show you, but the mud is exposed. So we need really low tides during the day when it's daylight. So we're limited in the number of tides we get like that in the springtime, which is when you can plant. So you can see here how exposed it is. So what we're looking at this year is experimenting with scuba and being able to plant in more places because we'll be able to access them, not just on the really low tides. So that'll also inform how many acres we think we can plant if that goes well using these methods and scuba combined.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You said that it's appearing that it's moving, where it's growing better on the map. Where exactly, or around where do you think it's improving?
So I may have not been very clear. So where we're planting, where we think it'll do well based on water quality conditions, and so then we're seeing it grow more in those areas that we're planting. One exception would be right outside of the State Park Marina in this area. I don't know if people have seen it out there, but there's a big bed coming back in that area that we didn't plant. So that's one area that we've seen it come back. We've also seen little snippets of eelgrass, small beds coming in back here, which is interesting because that's probably the least good conditions. And we did try to plant back here 1 year, and we had success for about a year, and then it died off. That was our least successful plot, was right off Mitchell Drive in Los Osos. But there's other plots that have come back naturally, small, but they've come back in little bits back there. And then it's hard to see on this map because it's small. But all up here, this is where the healthy eelgrass is, up here and along here.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
When did you say that your report on the eelgrass was going to come out, your new map?
The new map. I think by April. So we can email it to Eric or share it with you all that way. And then we always put that on our website when we have a new eelgrass report. And then another thing that we do at State of the Bay is we go to community groups and do presentations for them about whatever topics in the report they're interested in. So if you know of organizations, they can get in touch with us through our website, or if you have my email address, and we can come directly to them. So we go to the Rotary Club and one of the Kiwanis clubs, the Fly Fishers group in Santa Lucia Fly Fishers, so all different kinds of organizations that have different interests about the bay. So we can do that as well with regard to eelgrass.
Lexi, before we... Oh, go ahead, Lynn. Go ahead.
Lexi, was the eelgrass is growing... I can see it growing by the sand along the sand spit. But that wasn't planted, was it?
No, so we didn't plant over here. There was a portion of that was planted as mitigation by the Army Corps a number of years ago.
It was wiped out.
A part of it did okay, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that
part
down,
of it is
that
down
was
farther.
Further to the north.
Yeah. Yeah, up at the top of the. But then some of it that's coming back on that end of the bulge there has been naturally recurring. We've planted in a couple places over there as well, but not all of the recurrence is from our planting. Some of it is.
Because it looks like it's really becoming mm-hmm. abundant.
Yeah.
We've this had these few very low tides. I can see it.
This plot is over there that we planted.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But there is some that we didn't plant as well, which is one of the ways that we tell if it's a good place to plant some more.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Lexi, before we leave the topic of eelgrass, two questions. Number one, why is eelgrass important in Morro Bay? And number two, you've talked quite a bit about, my word, not yours, looking for optimal, for sites that have optimal conditions. To the extent that that's known, what are they?
So eelgrass is important because it provides really important habitat for juvenile fish. So young fish, before they go out into the deep ocean, spend time in eelgrass beds because they're protected. They can hide, they can eat little invertebrates, and they can avoid predation from some of their predators. The other reason it's important is that there are other animals that depend on eelgrass to find their food. So a lot of the birds that we get that make Morro Bay famous, like our recent Winter Bird Festival, rely on eelgrass either to feed on eelgrass, like the black brant, or to find things to eat that are hiding in the eelgrass. Similarly, sharks, octopus, crabs, all sorts of things get in there and look for something to eat. And then eelgrass actually improves water quality in the bay because it anchors the sediment. So it keeps the sediment still, so that helps keep the water clear. And it also is a plant just like you would have in your garden where it uses CO2 and generates oxygen. So oxygen levels are important in the water just like they're important in the air because the animals living in the water need oxygen to breathe. So in order to have healthy populations of invertebrates, crabs, fish, you need oxygenated water. So eelgrass helps with that as well. And then your second question was about optimal conditions. So there's a certain depth profile that eelgrass does really well at. This is at a super low tide, but generally eelgrass can be exposed like this, but not all the time. So in areas that are exposed much more frequently on a regular low tide is not a good place for eelgrass because it gets too dried out by being exposed too often. So there's a certain depth where it does well, but you don't want it to get too low or too deep because it won't get enough light because it's just like grass on land. It needs light to photosynthesize. So there's depth profiles, and then there's water quality. So too much pollution, nitrates in the water, things that are negative in general to aquatic growth are not good for eelgrass. And they also can encourage algae growth. So just like if you have a fish tank that's not well balanced, you get a lot of algae in there. That can happen in the bay, and then that algae can cover up the eelgrass beds and make it hard for the eelgrass to get enough light to grow. So there's a number of different conditions we look at, and the research with Cal Poly was heavily focused on those water quality conditions, and they put out sensors all over the bay to help determine that information.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
And setting aside the, you said one of the most frequently asked questions of the program was swimming in the bay. Setting that one aside, because you've addressed that one, what are the next two most frequent questions from the public?
Where can I go see some otters? And where can I see birds? So we have a question. We don't have an otter question in the report, I must confess. But we do have a question about birds. Are the bird populations in Morro Bay healthy? Because Morro Bay is an important stop in the Pacific Flyway for migrating birds. And it's a really important component to our community, birding here. And so we look at that question. And seeing relatively stable diversity of bird population, so a similar number of different species, although the specific species might change over time, with notable declines in brant, black brant. The decline there is related to eelgrass. And snowy plovers have had a iffy couple of years, I believe mainly due to predation from other animals on the sand spit. So we cover those two. And then people ask about oyster farming quite a bit. They notice the oyster farms. A lot of people come here and don't even know that we have oyster farms. So they ask, is it safe to eat those oysters? Where can I find those oysters? How are they grown? So we have a little information in the report about that as well, how bacteria is tested to make sure that where the oysters are grown is safe for consumption. And then The other questions we get are not from visitors, but from residents. We get the question of how's the bay doing in terms of filling in? Because a lot of people who've lived here a long time may remember when the estuary program was started, the big concern was sediment filling in the bay rapidly. And we saw that right after the Highway 41 fire. And then right after that fire, we had a big rain year, and all this sediment came down. And so we get that question more from locals, you know, how is that going? And so the results there are hard to encapsulate. The bay is definitely filling in. It's a natural process for sediment to wash downstream, but it's definitely accelerated because we live here and we change the landscape. So there's a small sort of increase in sedimentation in the bay. But climate change kind of confuses the picture because by 2100, sea level rise may overtake that sedimentation process. So that's a question that'll be interesting if you come to the March 5th meeting. We'll have a climate expert talk about that.
Hmm. Well, there's no shortage of climate experts.
Yeah. There's also no shortage of things to do to help the bay and learn about the bay. So.
And speaking of which, how much is the sponsorship for a Mutt Mitt dispenser?
Oh, you know, I think it's now $375 or $400. But you can also just donate to the program without sponsoring a dispenser, since right now we have a waiting list. You can do that online.
Okay. And my last question, speaking of fish, and it's the question I'm asked the most often by people, can we eat the fish in the bay?
In the bay. I don't often get that question. So I would say... most of the time when people buy fish, like Jeremiah was talking about, they're buying fish that wasn't caught in the bay. It's maybe landed in Morro Bay, or the boat is from Morro Bay. But when you go to the fish market, you're buying fish that was caught in the deeper ocean. So that fish is good to eat. The fish in the bay, people do recreationally fish, and I think it depends on the fish you're eating. I think for the most part, that's probably fine. The water quality is good. We don't really track... So with oysters grown in the bay, the Department of Public Health tracks whether those are clean enough to eat. No one does that for fish in the bay. So I can't tell you that you're not going to get sick from a fish, but I believe that considering the water quality, it would be fine. But Morro Bay is a marine protected area, so there's only certain places you're allowed to fish. So we do get that question quite a bit. And you can go on California Department of Fish and Wildlife's website to find out where you're allowed to fish, and the T piers is one spot that you're allowed to fish with a fishing license, right? I believe.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else? Gene?
Yeah, back in the Cuesta Inlet, I find old oyster shells. They're maybe half inch wide and maybe 2 or 3 inches long. Those must have been native oysters. Are there any of those left over?
The native oysters are pretty small.
Yes.
And circular. So we've had reports here and there of people seeing a few in the bay. We haven't ever seen a large population in the bay, so it's unclear if we have a local consistent population or if we're getting a few coming in from the tides, you know, the spats coming in and sticking somewhere in the bay. We certainly aren't seeing a large population of oysters in the bay.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to add something, and principally, well, it's about fish, fin fish. So because we have two oyster farms, very, very productive, very good oyster farms, here in the bay, the water quality, and you know this, Lexi, is tested all the time, and fellows who own the oyster plants have to do it themselves and pay for it themselves. It's constantly, constantly tested, more than I can even believe, really. But in any case, if the water is good enough for an oyster, which is a filter feeder, fish are not necessarily filter feeders, then the fish would be theoretically cleaner than the oyster. And also, as far as the fishing in the bay itself goes, Morro Bay is a marine protected area, but fishing for fin fish is legal.
In the whole bay or only
in
on
the bay.
Piers?
And as far as I know.
Oh, okay. I thought it was only on piers.
It's the whole bay.
So it's fin fish, not obviously to be confused with crabs or other types of shellfish. That is not legal. But in any case, feel free to fish in the bay. I would recommend a license.
License would be good. And I would also just note that as the estuary program is not a regulatory entity. We're a local nonprofit. So those regulations, you should talk to fishermen that know them or go to California Department of Fish and Wildlife. That's another question we get. How do I complain about XYZ? Call California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? Marlis? No? No, I mean, for Lexi?
No.
No? Okay. Director? Madam? No? Lexi, that was wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
it's always, a pleasure. It's always informative. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for taking your time. Thanks.
Sure. Okay, next we have Councilperson McPherson, who is our City Council liaison, and is going to tell us about the most recent update of the advisory board's handbook and bylaws.
Yes, and first I should thank Lexi. That was very interesting. I really appreciate it. I'm glad I was here to hear it. So thank you. Yes, you know, the advisory board handbook was first done in 2002, and since that time it's been updated a number of times and several times over the last couple of years. So I would first of all suggest, I'm only going to cover the most recent changes for you, but if you haven't read it, I would suggest that you do read it. And I noticed that Eric put a link in your agenda packet so that you could actually link right to it and read it in its entirety. So let me just tell you, what. And by the way, I did serve on the subcommittee that revised the handbook, and I did on the previous revision. So I've looked at it a number of times, and I'm happy to answer any other questions you have that pertain to it that I don't address in this presentation. First, let me just talk about a couple of changes that actually don't apply to you, but they do apply to a couple of other advisory boards. You know, we have 6 permanent advisory boards, and in addition, we have some special ones that we usually appoint just for a project. And we recently have had two special advisory boards, one that looked at the general plan, and the second one that was overseeing the water reclamation facility. And at our most recent meeting, when we revised the handbook, we actually disbanded both of those committees. The general plan is completed. It's currently in revision. And the wastewater treatment, or the water reclamation facility, I should say, is really beginning to be implemented. So all of the major decisions have been made on that project. So we transferred the financial part of it to the Citizens Finance Advisory Board. And any technical issues that emerge in the future here will be addressed by the Public Works Advisory Board. So, and we also, the other change we made was to add one position to the TBID, or the Tourism Board. We added somebody for vacation rentals because we included them now in the TBID. So that does not pertain to you, but those were changes that we made. Some of the changes were just very minor, and these were recommended by Barbara Spagnola, who is the chair of the Citizens Finance Advisory Board, and she wanted to just clarify the absence rule. And so now, if you need to be excused from a meeting or you can't attend, you need to notify the chair and the staff. And if you miss 3 in a row or 25%, you do need to come to council. And it's in a calendar year. So that was a very minor change. She also wanted us to put in the handbook that if we don't have any qualified candidates for a given position, we shouldn't appoint anyone. So we didn't want people to feel bad if they were the only applicant and they didn't get selected. if they didn't have the sort of knowledge or skill set or background that was useful and necessary for a particular advisory board. So that was in response to Barbara's comments. We also now will appoint temporary people. If we have more than the number of candidates that we're looking for, we can appoint an alternate so that if a vacancy becomes available, they can fill in. And now this is something that probably does apply to you because you were very kind enough to address this issue and examine it and talk about it, and that's the work planning process. So we did look at your suggestions and the comments that you made and that other advisory boards made, and we came to the conclusion that the best process is actually the one that we've been using, which is we have a strategic planning process. We start with the 10-year financial forecast, and then we make 4-year goals, and every 2 years we adjust the objectives under those goals to meet the goals. And this current year, we have 26 objectives, and the process for developing that, and then from that flows the work plan for each advisory board. What happens is that in the year of an election, which is coming up, when you have a new council that is seated, so we could potentially have 3 new council members seated in next December, that starts the new planning process for re-examining the goals and objectives and then setting them for the next 2 years. So for the 2 years that that council will be meeting, you will have a new set of objectives. And the process is that when the new council is seated, they will first ask for input from all of the advisory boards and from the staff. So you will participate in the process of helping to determine what should be on the goals and objectives list and on your own work plan. And then once we've got the input from the advisory board, we will ask staff to bring to several different public forums where, again, you may come and speak at any kind of a meeting, but there'll be at least 2 where the public is invited to also participate in the process of setting goals and objectives. And then based on that, the council will make a decision about what's in the final plan. So that's the process that will be used, and it is essentially what was used, and it will be used in the future. So if new issues come up during the year, what we're asking, and we're actually also asking the council to do this, is that you need to, instead of just agendizing a new issue, you need to actually ask the council if you can look at that issue. And it really comes down to staff, a staff time issue, and can we handle it? And then if that's the case, we would put it on as a future agenda item and say, yes, go ahead. And the council is also being asked to be a bit firmer to sticking with our work plan so that even if the council wants to agendize a new issue, we have to ask the city council or the city manager if the staff has sufficient time to work on that. And if they do not, we have to take something off the work plan so that we can add something. So it is just a way of trying to manage the workload of our staff and make sure that we're addressing the priority issues that we've all agreed we should be focusing on. So then we also talked quite a bit about how does an advisory board report recommendations back to the council. And there are a number of ways that this can happen. If you really want us to take it seriously and look at it and discuss it, you need to make a formal motion, second, and take a vote on it. So if you just kind of discuss an issue and you all make comments, Eric can put that in a staff report and it can eventually get, or it'll come in the minutes, but it won't necessarily get addressed by the council. So it's really important that if it's something that you want to make a specific recommendation on, that you do go through a more formal process of taking a vote, and then Eric can pass that on, or I could, or the liaison could do that. And then communicating with staff, and I don't know that this is a problem or an issue with the Harbor Advisory Board, but it is with some of the advisory bodies. We are asking that if you have questions for the staff, you get them to staff ahead of time as opposed to springing them on the staff at a meeting. And it's just courtesy to the staff so that they have time to think about it and to prepare an answer before the meeting. And we do have some where they're a little bit casual about that, and they put staff on the spot, and we don't want to do that. We want to really, we respect our staff, and we want to make sure that we treat them fairly. So that's getting questions to them ahead of time is what we're asking. Then we also reduce the number of meetings. And this is for all of the advisory boards, with the exception of the Planning Commission. And essentially, we are reducing them by one meeting during the year, although the Citizens Finance Advisory Board actually asked to have theirs reduced two more. So they are going down to seven meetings. Parks and Rec is currently at six, and we're asking the rest of them, aside from planning, to go down to nine. So you already take off in January and in July because of timing of holidays. So I think what they're asking, and this, of course, could be changed, is that you also take off in December. Obviously, if something comes up, an emergency or an issue, you can always call a special session. That's true about the council. It's also true about advisory boards, with the appropriate notification. So, and then finally, for the Harbor Advisory Board, I know that you had wanted us to add to your list of duties, and so I did actually use the language that I believe you used, and we added to your purpose and your duties that the Harbor Advisory Board provides a channel of communication from the individuals, businesses, and groups that live or have businesses on the harbor to the city council. So to make it clear that you are that communication conduit to the city council. And I think that summarizes all of the changes that we made. If you have any questions about that or any other portions of the advisory board handbook, I'd be happy to answer them at any time or all times.
Okay, before you leave, thank you.
Yeah, and by the way, I have something else to share with you, but I'm going to ask for questions now.
Okay. Questions regarding this? Gene?
Yes, if we reduce our meetings to nine, will that just make our meetings go longer? Are we reducing the workload, or are we just making our workload longer at our meetings?
Well, let me explain why we did it. Part of it was a balance. We looked very carefully at the way we are engaging citizens in the process. And one of the goals is to expand our communication and outreach to the public. And so we looked at how many people attend advisory board meetings, how many people watch them on YouTube, and we concluded that it's not the best way to get citizen input into the process. So it's a balance of the staff time that it takes, and what we've decided is that we want to reach out to the public in multiple other ways in addition to our advisory boards. So we've hired a company that does polling on public polling, and we also are going to be having more forums and citizen meetings and ways to engage the public in multiple ways. And so part of it is it's a capacity issue for staff more than anything else. As I say, I don't know that your meetings would necessarily be longer. I think the question is, do you have something that comes up in those months when you're not normally now going to have a regular meeting? Do you need to have a meeting then, and you can schedule one if something is urgent?
Yeah, thank you very much, Marlis.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a concern about December and January, because they're back-to-back, and there would be quite a an absence of the Harbor Department's function, I wonder if it wouldn't be more advantageous to stagger them.
You know, you can certainly make that decision. I know that after we had made a decision about the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee, they wanted to change the months, too. So it really has more to do with the workload, and it's fine. Any other month would be fine if it works better. You just need to let us know.
And also, I just question in my own mind, if Facebook hits and participation in this room at the time of a meeting is not still representative of the citizens, because each one of us represent a sector of the waterfront. So I believe that we are the citizens' representatives here, and they communicate often with us
directly.
Right. Right, so I know a lot of people don't watch city council meetings, but that does not take away from the importance of the city council, and I believe it's the same situation here. So we are the representatives of the citizens.
No, I appreciate that, and that's, I understand that. That's actually why we added that statement in the very beginning, that is, you do represent that communication link with the various groups on the harbor and on the Embarcadero. So, I recognize that you do represent a number of citizens by virtue of being here in your discussion.
That's all. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Just right along with what Jeremiah was talking about, maybe it would be good if you're hiring somebody to research this and such, if you could guide people to those meetings. Because, I mean, you've already got something in place, and if people, I know people like to complain about everything, but if you just say, well, have you gone to a meeting? Have you contacted these people? It's already in place, so just work with that and make that better rather than spreading it out to a whole lot of different areas. Just a thought.
Yeah, it's very difficult to get people to attend meetings. Yeah. That's the interesting thing. I mean, it's true about all of the advisory boards, and it's true, at the council, we get quite a few people, but it's always the same people. And so one of the things we're trying to do is reach more broadly across the community to find out what other people are thinking and not just the ones who perhaps come to a meeting. So we are really just trying to make our reach broader. I would agree with you if there was a way to get them here. When it's an issue that impacts them directly, believe me, they hear about it and come. And I know that from being in the audience when the liveaboards came. And so if it affects them directly, they do come.
Yeah. Is the data about YouTube viewings available?
Yes, it is. If you go into the city website and you look at where it says minutes and videos, or how do I watch a video, they'll show all the recent videos and they'll show how many times it's been viewed. And you can go back and actually look at all of the videos and look at any that you want. All of the meetings that have been videoed are available. So, and the number of times they've been watched.
And to the extent that you know, and you may not, which is fine, what is the current lag time between a meeting and its availability on YouTube?
Oh, Lori may know because she has to put it on there.
She does, that's right. Because sometimes it seems, irrespective of which body we're talking about,
right,
it's a long time.
Our office usually gets it like 3 to 4 days later.
Three or four, your office?
Yeah.
Does that mean it's generally available on
we
YouTube?
We usually upload it that day to YouTube.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So, Marlis, the handbook and bylaws that was ratified by council January 28, 2020, on page 9, paragraph 3, has to do with advisory body work plans, which you spoke to earlier. So the one of the sentences is the city council will ask each advisory body for input into the work plan as part of the 2-year city goal and action item plan process. Can you speak to when that will take place? When will a body be asked?
Well, it would be in the first part of the year, so January, February.
Okay. Bearing in mind that if there's no advisory body meetings in January, well, let me ask the other end of the bookend. By what date would the advisory body need to submit their input into council?
I don't know the answer to that question at this point in time, but I would suggest that if you know it's going to be coming, you could begin that process at any point in time so that you're ready for it. You could, if you know what I mean. I mean, you could be discussing it in the fall so that you're ready to submit and you're ready to go knowing that we would be asking for it in January or February. And then there would be a couple of, as I say, meetings open to the public where you're again welcome to come and provide input again and speak to your priorities. So
I can't speak to any of the other bodies, but this body plans as a general rule plans its activities 2 to 3 months in advance. Given that, it would be very helpful if council could let all of the bodies know, give them a deadline for the input.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be. The challenge, of course, is that the council is elected in November, and it's a new council. So, I don't know exactly when. Eric may know when better than I, when that process starts at the staff level, because he would be the conduit, you know.
I appreciate that, but that really wasn't my point, my point. My point is that having watched council for a number of years now, it is generally sometime around, it seems that it's around June or so, that the goals and objectives for the next 2 years are baked.
When they're baked.
And that's what I, and so if we back up from that, given that council has and I'm not being critical, has a protracted process by definition, that would bring us to presumably some month date by which council would say, advisory bodies, you need to provide your input by fill in the blank, March, April, whatever it is.
Yes, and that will obviously occur.
Okay.
I just don't know what it is at this point in time.
Okay. I know you know this because you pay attention to us. This particular body, the Harbor Advisory Board, during the entire time that I have participated in it, takes very seriously that its essential mission is to address in some meaningful way the business and the matters of the harbor. So I'm concerned, given the description that we just got about the process for adding to, for instance, the city's goals and objectives as council determines them in let's just pick the month of, say, June of a given year, and that they're baked in for the next two, is it calendar or fiscal years?
The goals and objectives are for 2 years. It's a two-year goal-setting process. The budget is every year. And it's actually the budget that's really finalized in June. The goals are usually set at least a month earlier than that because the budget is based on the goals.
Oh, okay, thank you. And this two-year time frame, it's fiscal or calendar?
Well, that's a good question, and I wish I could answer it directly. It seems to be fiscal, but sometimes some of them are calendar. So, but the budget is a fiscal year budget. Yeah.
Well, yes, we know that.
Right.
Given the fluid nature of the life and times of the harbor in all of its various aspects and manifestations, I am concerned, I don't know if anybody else is, but I'm concerned when I hear that it might be problematic to add a goal or to add an action item to the Harbor Advisory Board's work plan once a two-year City Council goals and action items program has been set.
I would not say it's problematic. I would say that if there is some need that you recognize and that you see that you need to address, it is just a matter of asking council if there's sufficient capacity on staff to take that on. And if staff feels this is equally important and he can't do it, then he may have to find something on his work plan that goes. But we certainly wish to address all of the issues that are significant and important in the city. And so we're not going to let them go just because it's a two-year goal-setting process. It's just that we want to make sure we focus on the priorities that we've established and have a process for addressing other issues that emerge that are important and keeping in mind that we have a limited staff and making sure that we recognize that. So it's a balance.
Okay. Okay. Anything else? Gene?
I concur with your issues, your concern.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you very much.
I know.
You said you had another thing to do, thank you for this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And truthfully, as I say, that rule applies to the City Council as well as the advisory boards. So the City Council, when we get to future agenda items on the council, the city manager can ask and find out if the staff has time to take that on, and if they don't, they have to take something off the work plan. So we're applying the same rules that we're applying to the advisory boards as we are applying to the council. And it really is so we stay on focus and we actually get some things done as opposed to just reacting. And I know I have been really pestering the city manager about implementation because we have a lot of plans and we have a lot of things that we want to accomplish, and I want to see things get done. So we're really focused on the priorities and taking care of them and addressing them and showing something for it. So.
Well, to state the obvious, given this reality, to state the obvious, I would hope that council will make absolutely certain that the advisory bodies that it chooses to carry at any given point in time understand how important it's going to be for those bodies to provide their input during your goal setting portion, because I'm guessing that one or two of them may not quite understand that. We now understand it.
Point well taken.
Thanks to you.
Yeah, what I was hoping to do, and just take a few more minutes, I don't know how many of you are aware of the fact that the City Council let a contract for about 24,000. What was that? Oh, sorry.
Something blew up.
No, it was the. Sorry, I just knocked it off. It's not a bomb. It's batteries on the floor. spent $24,000 to do a public opinion survey of Morro Bay registered voters likely to vote as a preparation to determine if it's possible to put a sales tax increase on the ballot in 2020. So I hope you're all aware of that fact. And we now have the results of that survey. And I wanted to just share a couple of things with you, in part because one of the questions actually has to do with the harbor, a couple of them actually. But the most important thing is that, well, as you know, and I know you know this, we are in serious need to improve our infrastructure in this community. It's true about the harbor. It's true about the city generally. And while we've had a balanced budget we've continued to have a balanced budget, the future does not look that bright. And so we are on the verge of having a structural deficit in the city's budget. So there is a need for additional revenue sources. And we have been kind of putting off doing that, but now we really feel we need to do something. So we're testing to see if we can actually put a 1% sales tax on the ballot in 2020. So the results of the survey show that essentially 70% of the respondents, and this was a scientific survey, by the way, so we could generalize to the population as a whole of registered voters, 70% feel there is a little need, some need, or a great need for additional funding for the city. And the other one is that when they were given potential ballot measure language, 62% that they would likely support a 1%, somewhat likely or leaning towards supporting a 1% sales tax increase for the city. We also had on there, and this was related to the harbor, the possibility, would you support a $50 a year parcel tax to support the harbor? And I want to find the exact, yeah. And for that one, there was a lack of community support. Less than half of the voters would support that kind of a measure, which requires a two-thirds vote for passage. The sales tax would be a general sales tax, so that would require 50%. But what I wanted to say is that all of the City Council members recognize the significance and the importance of the harbor and the Embarcadero to this city. It is the character of this city. And that if we are successful, if we decide, and we will decide, the council will decide in June or July whether or not to move forward with this. We are engaged in a lot of more public outreach on this issue to see if there is sufficient support. We would certainly hope that would raise $2 million a year, and we would certainly seriously consider general fund support for the harbor, which we have not had the money to do in the past. So I just want you to know about it and be aware of it. And this presentation, or the results of this survey, are on the city's website if you're interested. Or we could have somebody come and give you all of the results if you are interested. So you can let me know.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm speaking just for myself, I'm aware that it's on the site.
Okay. Any questions about it at this point? No? Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll pick up my mess.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
You want some help? Are you sure? Okay. Okay, the next agenda item is public comment. That's general public comment for anything that is not on the agenda or from folks who can't stay. And everybody that's our audience this evening is watching us at home in the thousands. So we're going to move right on to consent calendar. Say? Not yet. It's the first business item on the agenda. Oh, well, I don't care. I don't care. It was put on as the first business item as opposed to the consent calendar. Well, no, actually, there's another chief. but let's talk about the consent calendar. So does anybody need to pull A1, A2, or A3? So A1 is approval of minutes from the October 3, 2019 meeting. A2 is approval of Harvard Advisory Board minutes from November 7th, 2019. And A3 is the Harvard Department status report. And Eric, if I had a question about the status report, do I need to pull it or can I just ask?
No, you need to pull it.
Huh?
You need to pull it.
Need to pull it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, what are we doing, folks? Are we fine?
We're wondering if we're pulling it.
I'm going to start with you. Does anybody want to pull A1, A2, or A3? Okay, I'd like to pull A3 because I have some questions, which means that we will, the way that this is going to be parliamentary, let's see. If you know, Eric, can I ask my questions before we move to either accept or not accept A3?
Normally, you can approve A1 and A2.
No, yeah, it wasn't my question. So I'm unfamiliar with the pulling process. So I understand about A1 and A2, and we need to make a motion to approve them. But if I have questions about the Harvard Department status report, do we need to make a motion to approve first before we discuss it?
No.
Or can I just ask the questions?
Yes.
Ask my questions and then move on. Thank you. Okay. So, motion to approve A1 and A2.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to excuse me to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
Okay, and that's A1 and A2. Second, move to second. Any discussion? Seeing none. All in favor? Aye. Okay. Opposed? None. Carries. So I have a couple of quick questions about the staff report. Actually, I have a comment, which maybe I'm not supposed to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. Major kudos to the Harbor Department and its patrol for putting up the crab pot Christmas tree. It was a wonderful thing to see. So, thank you.
Pass that along. Thanks also need to go to the French's.
I understand, but that's a wonderful thing as well. But the labor to put it up, that was a great thing. In your report, you say the showers at the launch ramp bathrooms are going through an upgrade and so on. What is the current status of that, please?
The public facility folks putting more secure doors on there. We're putting a making those showers available for voters and liquor boards only. And our keep your showers available to the public. So keep those access.
Nice, bad.
Yeah, on.
I know, but it's fuzzy. It's bad.
Sure. Any better?
Perfect.
All right. Move over a little closer. I'm going to run out of wire. So in the last 3 or 4 months, we've had a significant amount of vandalism on both sets of showers, people both vandalizing just apparently for the glee of vandalizing public facilities, but mostly breaking in and into the coin-operated shower mechanisms and breaking those up, which are pretty expensive, and then having to put them all back in. So in the process of rebuilding all those and putting in new coin-op machines and sort of re-armoring the showers, we've decided to make the showers down at the launch ramp, down at Tidelands Restroom, available only to liveaboards and boaters, and they're going to have a key code access to get in. So we've put new doors on to secure those showers a little better. Part of it's an effort so that they're not wide open to the public to be vandalized over and over again, and also because our facilities are primarily supposed to be serving the boating public, and so that's why we're doing those for those showers. The ones at the T-Pier will still be open to the public, the shower at the T-Pier. So we just got information today, I think, from Matt Bishop in Public Works that they have most everything done on the doors and the door latching mechanisms and the enclosures to completely enclose those showers. And now they're just ready to put in, with our assistance, the key are the timing mechanisms, the coin-op mechanisms. We're still having them be coin-op. We're not going to give the water away for free. So those are going to be ready to go in. So those should hopefully go in this next week. Maybe start looking at it this weekend when our Harbor Patrol officer that is primarily doing that gets back on duty on Sunday. So we'll hopefully get those up and running here pretty quickly. And then Public Works Facilities folks are going to start concentrating on the North T-Pier showers and getting those back up and operational.
In your report, you noted that the Sandspit emergency phone has been updated and that the funds came from the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department. Approximately how much was it, please?
Lori may jump in, but it was something a little bit north of $10,000 for all the equipment and other things we had to do. Fortunately, we were able to use the old existing concrete pad that we poured out there years ago for the original. But it was just north of $10,000, and we had our Harbor Patrol staff do all the installation.
So that's a major contribution from the Friends of the Morro Bay
Absolutely.
Harbor Department.
Yeah.
You described recent city council activity. You said adoption of resolution number 119, approving amendment number 1 to the commercial building lease for 3 Stacks and a Rock. Then a resolution 10119 about for Glad's Landing, lease site 34W. Can you give us a current status of those projects? I'm from a physical standpoint.
Yeah, so the building lease at the old aquarium location, 595 Embarcadero, with 3 Stacks and Rock Brewing Company. We've got a company in there right now doing some demolition work that we committed to, which is basically removing the chain link caging around the seal enclosure area on the outside. That's going to be converted over into an outside seating area for 3 Stacks and a Rock when they get up and operational. And then on the interior tank room, the old fish tank room, we're removing most of the fish tank facilities on the inside because they're going to make that'll be converted over into their brewing room. They're going to bring in all the tanks and whatnot you need to do the brewing. And so all those fish tanks are being removed out of the interior. And then they're currently got an application in and are processing the permits to do good amount of interior work in there. They've got to add restrooms. The restroom in there was never meant for the public. And even as an employee restroom, it's quite underserving what it needs to be doing. So they have to put in ADA-compliant restrooms, moving a couple interior walls around, doing a lot of interior upgrades to that front retail area. The upstairs, they're not leasing. That still is under our ownership, and it's just locked off for now. So doing a good amount of work up front and in the seal tank area and then over in the aquarium tank area. And they're doing nothing on the outside. They're not renting anything in the back. the wharf is still ours. And that wharf is in pretty bad shape, so there's nothing we can do with it anyhow. So they hope to be open by March, April. And then get up and running by the summer.
Okay. And you reported on a grant that the city authorized receiving from the State of California Division of Boating and Waterways for removal of abandoned surrendered vessels and hazards to navigation of $20,000. Do you have specific work you've already identified that you would like to use that those funds for?
Yeah, we've already got, I think, three vessels in our possession ready to go down that road. Hazards to navigation, my recollection is we've only used it once for hazards to navigation. There's some trees that fell down, tide lines down in the water that were quite a ways out in the water, and we used it for removing those trees about 15 or 20 years ago. Mostly it's all been used for boats, and, yeah, we've got three now. We'll probably burn through easily half of that with those three. I was just contacted the other day by a person in Los Osos who relatives passed away, and the house they inherited had an old boat on a trailer that they're trying to get rid of, so that may come down our way. So, and then there's I think Marina Square lean sailed the boat a while back, and they've got something for somebody didn't pay their rent, and they've got a boat in their possession that may come our way. So we'll probably burn through that $20,000 pretty quickly. And then I didn't answer the second part of your question. The lease site 34W, that's the little set of four slips between Bayfront Marina, which is the old fuel dock at the far end, that 15 set of slips at the far south end. And then you've got that little set of four, which is now called Glad's Landing. And then what used to be the old Cannery Wharf would have been the next facility north. So status there, new leaseholder is now the Upland property owner. That owns the lighthouse building, and he's going to go in and start replacing piles and doing some major upgrade work to those docks.
I presume that requires a raft of permits.
Yep. Yeah, the replacing pilings and doing the dock work likely is waivers with Coastal Commission and Corps of Engineers because they're not expanding or getting anything any larger, just replacing what's there, and then city building permits.
And in the status of HAB recommendations, number six is the GPLCP update. Can you give us a current status of that?
Those documents are currently with the Coastal Commission, the draft versions, the first draft versions that we kicked out as a city. After going through all those processes, they're up at the Coastal Commission, and community development staff are working back and forth with Coastal trying to address all their concerns. Once Coastal's done with it, it comes back to us, and we'll come in and finalize our version of it to bring back to Coastal Commission for final approval, which is expected to happen this year. I don't have an exact month. I know it's been a sliding scale, but I think it's been a lot of that's been due to Coastal and the amount of back and forth we're doing with them trying to get everything revised.
If you know, are provisions for the working waterfront and the Measure D still in the document?
Still in the document, and speaking with the community development director not too long ago, and a similar question came up. Once these documents come back to Coastal, they'll be going through more public process, and there'll be other opportunities for us to address those working waterfront and Measure D things we addressed. The community development director did mention that, we need to have a good close look at what is currently in there, and I'll work to get those documents, and then assuming they come back the same way from Coastal, and then we can, as a body, look at those and see if we want to readdress that or attend the meetings that go along with that process. And then beyond, so when the GP and LCP get done, then I believe the next step of the process is all the follow-on documents, all the master plans, the downtown waterfront master plan, and the, this master plan, that master plan. Then we start knocking those off and working on those. So I would suspect those master plans also have opportunities for us to address the working waterfront and Measure D issues as well to make sure things are consistent and what we hope to get in there gets in those as well.
While the HABS ad hoc working waterfront and Measure D ad hoc committee is no longer active, I'm sure that that committee would like to have an opportunity to take a look at the language that comes back from Coastal.
Okay. Who was on that committee?
It's Gene's committee.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else for staff report?
I have a question.
Lynn?
If I can ask a follow-up question on the showers that are going to be have a key lock, combination lock, I guess. How often do you plan on changing that combination? How does it get disseminated?
I can't reveal that. I don't know. That's a good question, Lynn. Well, part of it may have to do with liveaboard permits coming and going. If somebody ceases to be a liveaboard, that would make sense to change it. I wouldn't anticipate changing it too often just because it's going to get confusing for people. And if it, every 2 months something changes. But it'll get changed on a semi-regular basis. We'll have to develop some sort of methodology to make sure everybody mm-hmm. knows. But it'll be probably a four-digit keypad number.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, really quickly, under upcoming events there, February 15th, we have the Big Bad and Ugly Surf Contest, and it should be Big Bad and Ugly this year. We'll have fun.
Okay, anything else on A3? Okay, motion to approve A3.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion? A3? No? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None? A3 carries. That takes us to our business item portion of the agenda, and B1 is election of Harbor Advisory Board Chair and Vice Chair, which is an annual event. And so we have, we'll open it up with nominations for, I don't care which one we start with, Chair or Vice Chair. Nominations, anybody?
I would like to nominate Ron Reason, the current chair.
I second it.
Jeez, you guys, come on. Jeez.
I'm for life.
I second it.
I'm happy to nominate anybody who is interested in the position. Anybody. Look at all these. There's only one guy looking me in the eye. Everybody else is looking down, looking at the ceiling.
Get on with it.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So we need a motion to approve Ron Reisner as the chair for the Harbor Advisory Board for calendar year 2020.
I move that we approve Ron Reisner as chairman of the Harbor Advisory Board for the calendar year 2020.
I'll second it.
That's all right.
That was a nomination, not a motion. Okay, so moved and seconded. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Seeing none, carries. Okay, so nominations for vice chair?
I recommend that Mark become vice chair.
So you're nominating Mark Blackford for vice
That's
chair.
That's correct.
Okay. Lynn, you had something in mind?
Same thing.
Same thing in mind. Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Charisse, you don't want to be the vice chair?
I'm not going to add it to anybody, no.
Okay. Okay. So nominations closed. Need a motion to approve Mark Blackford as a vice chair for 2020.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Discussion? None. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Carries. Thank you. Thanks for your vote of confidence. Mr. Blackford, thank you for your willingness to continue to serve.
Is this my period where I have my five-minute acceptance speech?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go for it.
Now, I noticed that the city council in San Luis Obispo, they get paid. So do we get paid?
Would you like to make a motion to be paid?
Yeah. You're going to make our sessions go down even more.
Yeah. I tell you what, you can get paid as much as the funding that you find. Yeah. Okay, so B2 is update from the Boatyard Marine Services Facility. Actually, is there any public comment for B2? Okay, so B2 is update from the Boatyard Marine Services Facilities Ad Hoc Committee. Mr. McClish.
Thank you. Yes, I do have a report. Just recently, Eric, Harbor Director, and Councilman Red Davis and I met with John D'Annunzio from SLOCOG, and he has some possible grant funding ideas for our feasibility study.
SLOCOG is what, please?
San Luis Obispo County of Governments, and they put money towards transportation-type items, and boating is transportation, so they see that there might be a possibility for us. So we're looking forward to seeing what's available. That's it.
When you were talking with him, how far afield do they go when they search for funds? I mean, is it local? Is it county? Is it state? Is it federal? Is it intergalactic?
Well, I'm thinking it's looking at money that's locally available right now. But it's just in the beginning stages.
Okay. All right. Questions? Comments? Words of wisdom? No? Okay. Thank you. So B3... And as I mentioned a while back, our public this evening are all home watching this on television, so we don't have any public with us this evening here in the building. So B3 is update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee. Mr. Blackford.
I know we have an annual process for budgeting for the Harbor Commission or the Harbor Department, which includes capital improvement or capital needs. Have we started to undertake the update of the capital spreadsheets?
I have not.
Do you have an idea when they would be available in the future?
They're available now if you want to meet and start helping me do that. We're just starting to, you know, we're looking into mid-year budgeting right now. And then very shortly thereafter, in mid to late February, we start into the regular budget process. So the time is upon us.
Very good. I'll make a call.
And we can do that.
When the committee meets, is it correct to say that you will have it in mind, the assistance that you would like to have?
Yes, and in fact, I'll take a step back from that, and before we meet, we'll, if you remind me, I'll get something to you, those on the committee, what I'm looking for, including send the latest version, although I'm sure you have it, but send something to you so we can prepare for that.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. So that brings us to B4. B4 is update from the Eelgrass Ad Hoc Committee. Lynn?
Yeah, obviously not much has been happening with eelgrass. In my last report, I gave you the update that Anchor QEA was consulted and made their recommendation that the only really viable kind of mitigation plan that we could do would be in lieu mitigation, and to establish that kind of a problem plan would end up costing some $300,000, which is way beyond anything we could even consider right now. What Kathy Novak is doing is getting the regulatory agencies to sort of accept what people can make in donations to the NEP, but that too, we don't know how much longer that will go on. But still, in January, Eric and I met with Scott Collins, city manager in the community development, gentleman from Scott Graham, to discuss the status of the recommended policy statement that the Harbor Advisory Board sent for the GP and LCP. Scott told us at this meeting that the verbiage in the statement itself, the policy statement, was not really appropriate for the plans, but that the specific guidance on permitting was appropriate for the implementation section of the plan. The content of the implementation or specific guidance on permitting, he said, is good, and it will be included in the implementation part of the GPLCP. And this was the specific guidance on permitting, and I will read it to you. One is eelgrass policy will reduce the permitting requirement of pre-planning surveys to a letter from a certified biologist that states the presence and or absence, general areas of growth, and approximate amounts of eelgrass. A detailed report with the map of eelgrass beds, footprints, stem counts, density, and other parameters will not be required until the pre-construction survey, as outlined in the KEMP. That will be of benefit to any leaseholder who is upgrading his property along the waterfront, because he does not have to have a complete survey at that stage. That's going to save him a good bit of money. He will have to have the usual survey when it comes to pre-construction, but not another survey at pre-planning. So we did accomplish some streamlining of permitting with that statement being included in LCP. The second part was eelgrass policy should include language that allows for pre-planning surveys to be conducted outside the KEMP growing seasons when supported by the biologist. And that statement means that they will be able to pick the times when they're doing the surveys, the pre-planning surveys, or pre-construction surveys at an appropriate time for their construction, instead of having it mandated at a particular time of the year. So that will also give them some flexibility in doing their surveys. We have not been able to establish a whole comprehensive policy for the city, but we have managed to get something done towards streamlining of permitting. Eric, do you have anything that I've missed?
No, I don't think so. You pretty much nailed it all, and I think the implementation language you talked about, I think, the GPLCP itself is the going through Coastal right now, and we'll get that approved. And then there's the follow-on documentations, which include all that implementation strategies. That's all the master planning and all the other stuff. That's where Lynn's talking about. That's where that language will live, is in the implementation strategy stuff, which comes later.
Questions for Lynn? Given that the draft documents are full of all sorts of purpose statements, was the community development director specific about why he thought that our recommended eelgrass purpose statement was not appropriate for the update?
He did not specify exactly, but what he said was it was a flowery, not specific statement.
Okay. Anything else on B5? Thank you, Lynn. Oh, B4. Oh, I turned the page. So thanks for the help. B5, update on Harbor Department lease management policy. And two members of the Harbor Advisory Board are on that working group, and one of them is Sharice Hansen. So Sharice, can you give us an update?
Thank you, Ron. Okay, at our last couple meetings, we were working on the use of words like shall, may, will, and we've been working on those and going throughout the document and making the necessary changes. We did receive a copy from the city attorney with his notes, and so we reviewed all of those recommendations from him and figured out where they fit in and how it worked and flowed in the document and made those changes. Also, we're going around the document where there's things like Tidelands Trust Land and Working Waterfront, Embarcadero, and changing those to just say TTL. We have a couple things that we're still working on that are kind of independent items, such as the lease license agreement and lease template changes to reflect what we've done with the policy as far as edits go and changes. But as far as the city council reviewing the lease policy document, do we have an ETA or an expected time that we can submit that to them? Eric?
I believe it's March. We're tentatively going to the city council in March, and I think it's on the tentative agenda for the first meeting in March. I looked at two other things on the tentative agenda right before this meeting, but that wasn't one of them. But I think it's the first meeting in March.
Sorry, I'll get that question to you earlier. Okay, so as far as the license agreement.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that means, please?
Yes, I'm going to.
Ah, thank you. Okay.
So the state of California has made a couple changes to the way transient vendors can locate themselves throughout the state of California. And they have put it that either you're going to take their law or the city is going to have its own regulations and parameters that they follow. And so we are working to put together a license agreement that has different regulations, safety, and different things as such as placement. Where are they going to go? Are they going to be on the Embarcadero? Are they going to be at the Rock? And all of those are things that we're working on with the license agreement. And then we are figuring out where they're going to go and what kind of businesses they are going to be, such as like services, rentals, lessons, or they could possibly be prepared food, and then what kind of costs would be affiliated with these licenses. Would they be annual fees? So it would be mostly an annual fee so far that we've been working out, and then a percentage, like a lot of the brick-and-mortar places on the Harbor have a percentage affiliated with them. And so I have been personally going out and talking to a lot of the brick-and-mortar businesses that are located on the Embarcadero, especially the ones that are already paying percentage rents, and asking them how they feel about that, would they want to expand, and how they feel about other people coming in. Then I've also been talking to other community members, how they feel like there might be a hole where we need a particular type of business on a seasonal basis, and what would be the most advantageous for both locals and tourists. And then also trying to find some of the possible new business owners who would be interested in taking over the space. Space is available based on seeing them at different events and or peddling on the street, giving them the option rather than just setting up shop in a congested area. So that's what we're working on.
Okay, and when you talk about all of these elements of a potential licensing agreement, you're talking about making creating a recommendation, or that's not true necessarily. You're talking about creating something that would be for City Council review.
Correct.
As opposed to this working group.
Making laws.
Yeah.
No, it's all based on our research and looking at current documents and comparing them to other places that have working documents to make sure that we are matching similar situations in similar places, and then giving that recommendation to the city for approval before it gets put in act.
Okay, thank you. Questions? None?
Our next meeting is February 12th at 1 p.m.
Okay. Eric, you want to add anything?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Other than we received some input from the council subcommittee that's watching this process and helping us with this process, and we've incorporated their input into our action, so. So the city attorney's stuff has been done. City council subcommittee's had a shot at it and given us some input. So hopefully this will be, knock on wood, potentially our last meeting here next week. And we will get some final product to the city council.
Okay. So that brings us to B6. B6 is application of Harbor Department strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, the SWOT analysis that the Harbor Advisory Board engaged in late last year, to the remaining council goals and action items. Eric, you want to present this? You have a staff report?
I do have a staff report. So as you know, we went through the SWOT analysis, strength. You just went through it. I didn't do that again. As it pertains to our four overarching council goals, which were achieve economic and fiscal sustainability, improve public infrastructure, complete updates to the land use and zoning policies, the GP and LCP, basically, and improve communication and engagement with the community. So last year we looked at the Harbor Department strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats as they relate to those four goals. You put together a kind of a collated memo that put everybody's input into the top. I think we took the top three under each one of those categories, under each goal item, and tonight's exercise is an effort to hopefully try and see in which of those four SWOT items we may be able to leverage our findings, our three top items, against the goals and objectives to see if we can help push some of those goals and objectives along. I guess is probably the simple way of putting it. I have no preconceived notion on a way to go through this. So hopefully people have had a time to look at things and kind of put their thoughts together in terms of what we did on that SWOT analysis and what our top findings of those were, and then how to move those forward into the goals and objectives and see if we can do something with them.
In your staff report, you identified a list
of, quote, outstanding goal slash action items relative to the harbor and harbor department are as follows. And this list is derived from the city council's approved 2019-2020 goal setting.
Correct. Those are the items A through G. What I saw is the outstanding work plan items that are still being pursued.
So tell us a little bit about goal one, item one, which is to complete and implement the fee study and cost allocation plan. What specifically is outstanding as far as that is that item is concerned?
So the fee study and cost allocation plan was done. The master fee schedule has gone to the council a couple of times. As you know, we looked at slip fees and liveaboard fees a little more in depth than just a one-time look. With your recommendation, went to those two groups to see if we could, because those increases were pretty significant compared to where they were, and so we went with your recommendation to the council, and the council said, yes, go talk to those two groups and see what you can work out in terms of alleviating the financial pain on those two groups, which we've done a fair amount of. So in terms of the overall master fee, cost allocation plan's done. It's in the books. It's being charged. It's done. There's nothing more to do with that. The master fee study, there's a good number of community development fees that are still outstanding that community development's working with the Chamber of Commerce and others to try and do kind of what we're doing with the slip fees and liveaboard fees. Otherwise, the slip and liveaboard fees are still outstanding, and they're tentatively going to the council on that first council meeting in March 10th, I believe, tentatively to be effective July 1, since we're getting that close to the fiscal year. So those are the two outstanding ones I have. I've met with the liveaboard community pretty extensively and basically gotten to what I believe is a bottom line that we can do with that fee. And not too much more work to do with that community other than take their input and pass it on to the council if they have any more input. I think my work with the commercial fishermen is still a work in progress. I don't think I'm to the bottom of where we're going to go with that in terms of talking with them and trying to minimize the impacts on them. But that's where the process stands on those two items.
Well, given that council goal number one is achieve economic and fiscal sustainability, given the work that they have did in its SWOT analysis relative to that particular goal, do you see anything from our work product, from our SWOT work product, that would apply to goal one, item one? Because I do not, but maybe I'm missing something.
Nor do I. Whether it was a strength, weakness, an opportunity, or threat, nothing is No. I don't know if anybody else on the board has.
That's fine. That's my next question. So goal one, item one, do we have something that we can contribute based upon our SWOT analysis for council goal number one? Gene?
I think that we've already stated how we feel about this. I don't know what else we can add. It looks like Eric's working with the harbor, with the liveaboards and the commercial fishermen. So I think that's already a done deal. Unless somebody else has something.
Okay. Okay. All right, so goal one, item five. So item five, if we look at the handout that we received this evening, from the council's established goals. Action item number five is bring forward a comprehensive set of revenue enhancement options for city council consideration. And as it relates to our work on council goal number one, actually, you know, Eric, it strikes me that, and I mean, I'm happy to do it differently. It strikes me that maybe a way to do this is to have some general discussion about this to make sure we're all on the same page that you were on, and then have the Harbor Advisory Board specifically, if it has not already done so, consider each one of the open action items that you have listed in your staff report in terms of whether there's something that we can offer. Each of us independently can come at the next meeting. And what can we offer that might help in terms of a strength? What might be useful if we identify a particular weakness in a particular area, or opportunities, or a threat? Otherwise, I think it's going to be a little bit of a laborious process. Oh, Dana, you're ready? What a guy.
Well, it's what we're supposed to do.
It is. So, Dana, go. I thank you. I apologize. Please.
And, Ron, before you go, I'm sorry, Dana.
Sorry.
I think it was the last meeting, we went through the laundry list of strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and picked our top three.
Yes, we have that.
You highlighted that. Okay, so okay.
Yeah, we all have that.
Okay, all right, that's it. Sorry.
Yeah, no apology necessary. But, however, one or all of the top three for any one of the four SWOT categories may or may not be directly applicable to goal one, action item five, or action item eight, or action item nine, or action item 10. I mean, it looks, I think we're Dagan's going to take care of us.
I did my homework. I didn't say it was right. a little confusing, but I basically have for strengths on almost all of these is the fact that we've already done this, or it's in process. And or do you want me to go through each one of these?
Please.
Okay.
Sure.
So basically what Eric just said about the fee studies and cost allowance allocations is exactly what I have here. You know, working with the fishermen and the liver boards was the opportunity. And B is the revenue enhancement. Like I said, we've already gone through this so much, so that is our strength. We have all this knowledge on this. One of the weaknesses I thought might be some items that we've talked about, whether it's concerts or food trucks or whatever. I'm not specific to any of these, but they may be unfavorable to residents, you know, because a lot of these revenue generators are for tourism. For the most part, I mean, there are some of them that are for locals, but you know, if you start putting stuff out at the Rock, I think the locals are not going to be happy with that. So that was one of the weaknesses or the threats for revenue enhancement. Aquarium, it's in the process. Weakness, budgetary opportunities, grant funding, threats. Lack of resources, so you're kind of back to budget situation. Waterfront lease policy plan, it's in process. I couldn't really find too much. I didn't really have much information on that. Wind farm, it's going on, and it has favorable public opinion and definitely an economic driver for our city in a lot of different respects. It would weaknesses. We have little or no authority as far as steering this boat. I mean, we're trying, but I don't see that we really have that kind of control. It's in the federal government hands right now. Parking management. Our strength is we have available existing parking. Weaknesses, budget. Opportunities.
So just to be clear, you're now talking about council goal number 2, improve public infrastructure.
No, I'm down on F of these right here.
Which is goal 2, item 3.
Okay. Yeah, begin work on parking management plan to address parking issues in the downtown. For those that are following along. Oh yeah.
You're on city council goal number two.
Correct.
Which is improve public infrastructure, and their action item number 3, which is to complete or bring to council a parking management plan to address parking issues in the downtown and waterfront areas.
Correct. So, our strengths are the available existing parking. Our weaknesses might be finance, again, opportunities, available land for parking, and threats are lack of resources, which is kind of finance, too. The last one, which is goal 2, item 4, complete the RFQ for Marine Services Facility feasibility study and bring forward information to City Council for next steps. I said we're in the process, we have a plan, we have criteria, weaknesses, money, opportunities, grant funding, and threats is lack of resources. So that's pretty much how I did this. I don't know. You want to?
Oh, okay. Charisse, comment? Commentary?
Well, not on what Dana.
On the agenda item.
As far, I took it a little differently to look at all of these and to decide which one would be the best for us to grab hold of and do a more intense SWAT on it. And as you mentioned, with all of the with a lot of the items, there are things that we've already kind of been working on. Some of them were coming to a close. Some of them could actually use a little bit more research. So I did an order of like 1, 2, 3 as far as priority, and I just picked the top 3 that I felt would be the best. And one was F, goal number 2, item number 3, as far as parking management. I feel that a SWAT on that one would actually bring to light some of the different ways that we can have success on this issue. That was my main one. And then further research and looking into B, goal number 1, item number 5. So more for, just more research as far as revenue enhancement options, and that could aid the City Council in a lot of ways. And then third would be G, goal number 2, item number 4, to go further delving into that, but really try and, you know, use the time that we're going to put into that to look for actual grants and other fundraising possibilities that are out there, because it's just that particular issue, that's what it's lacking for anybody to want to move forward with that. So that's the way I did it.
And based upon what you've learned about G, if there was some grant funding available, how would you suggest it be applied? What should it accomplish at this stage?
At this, it wouldn't be to pay for a feasibility study. It would be to actually pursue completion of a boatyard.
Oh, that's a big grant.
Yeah, but at least we would be working in that direction. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Feasibility, if the money's there, it's more feasible.
Yeah. That's well put, actually. That's well put. Okay. Okay. Well, that was an interesting approach. Thank you. Okay.
I like it.
Mark, your thoughts?
Well, I think that we're all very clear that financial and economic sustainability is a very, you know, high and admirable goal, but we need to sort of focus down on the particular actions that we can do in support of that, and what we need to identify is what those opportunities for us to do with regard to that. How do we improve the possibility of the wind farm coming in? How do we move forward with regard to other revenue enhancement opportunities such as dry camping? These types of things that we need to continue to stew on and bring up to a boil or a simmer, or a slow simmer, so to speak. Also looking at, you know, for instance, goal number two, action item number six, is to implement City Council approved capital improvement projects. How do we apply for approved capital improvement projects if it's not going to be able to be funded through the Harbor Department operating funds? We need to find other sources of funds and then get on the improvement projects list. Right now, I don't know if any of our capital improvement that we're proposing is on the improved projects or capital improvement projects list for the City Council, if they've approved any of those. So we need to be cognizant that we could be missing out on, you know, sort of the opportunity to pursue some of these things just by not having them on the forefront. I think it's the extent of my input.
Okay, thank you. So goal two, action item six, which was not... Okay, yeah, okay. Lynn, your thoughts?
I'm afraid not very much. I don't really see how, as a Harbor Advisory Board, we can actually do... there's very little that we can do toward these objectives other than make recommendations. So,
any number of which we've made.
Right. We've made a lot of recommendations, but there's very little that we can do to further those recommendations. Somebody else has to actually execute.
Okay. Jeremiah? as it relates to B6?
Yes. Goal number one is something that, an issue that we're in the fishing industry very, very cognizant of and want to ensure that our waterfront is cared for, has the facilities to take care of its needs, if you will. And it's very difficult. Of course, money is always difficult, especially in times like this. Every city and town in the country is struggling with CalPERS here and other same situations elsewhere. But anyway, one of my concerns was, I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but using the available funds that we have now, and I'm referring to the $250,000 that the city has received from the lease of the intake building and its accompanying connections. We haven't heard anything. I haven't heard anything about the status of that funding. It's been over a year. I, for one, am very concerned about where it's going, what it's doing, and why haven't we heard about its disposition? So anyway, that's one of the things hopefully we'll be looking at soon.
Okay. Gene?
Yeah, I just kind of cherry-picked a few of them. Goal number eight, the aquarium. Great idea, but the weakness I see is in its location. But I do see an opportunity to use the PG&E intake area. It's got parking, and it seems like a better location for an opportunity. And goal number one, number 10, the wind farm. Here it is. I think it's another great idea, but the weakness I see is we have no location for any support for this project. We've got an opportunity. It would be the PG&E location, the building there. It's the whole yard and everything else. That seems to me, if it's already zoned industrial, that seems like a good opportunity. And then goal number two, number three, the parking. The weakness I see would be any removal of any parking at the street ends. I think that's against our title and trust agreement. But the opportunity I see is that we need to provide more ADA stalls on the street ends. We only have three for the entire Embarcadero, and they need to have more. So those are opportunities. And that's what I see.
Okay, thank you. Making notes from what you're saying. Just give us just a second here. So would you repeat your point about the wind farm, Gene?
I don't think that as a weakness, we haven't determined any location for its support. They're going to need a lot of area. If you looked at their proposals before, they have acres of area that they've got to have support system. And we haven't even identified it. I would think that would be something that we would include in a general zoning map that's saying that, yeah, this is an area that we can do support for offshore wind farm and keynoted in a zoning location. And the opportunity would be for, of course, the PG&E site or the Dynegy site or whatever that location is called now. But that's the only area that we can have any major support area.
Okay.
Yeah, but it hasn't been identified. I mean, we should at least acknowledge it. Yeah.
Okay, well, okay, so thank you, all of you, for that. I took some notes there. So it seems to me that maybe what we could do, so, well, before I say this, Eric, what did you have in mind that you thought the HAB could accomplish with B6?
Well, I put one example in there, and as you're all talking, trying to think of a couple others and how we can use this as a tool. Because really, the SWOT analysis is a tool to be used. And as an example, just trying to tie some of these things together. And this could be either a recommendation of the HAB that came out of the HAB or just an idea that we collectively come up with and say, yeah, that's something, and then it's a known quantity, and maybe we can figure out a way to move forward and inform that into the process. So I'm just looking,
what process?
Well, the process of moving any of these items forward, moving any of the A through G forward. Again, I was trying to kind of come up with a specific example of what I would see as maybe trying to move some of these things forward. Here's an example. Goal 1, item 10, the wind farm. Continue to pursue the offshore wind farm development. Um, looking at the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. I'm just looking at opportunity A. So that's under goal one. And you look under the opportunities list we have for goal one. Opportunity A, which is one of our highlighted ones as being the top three. Implement a long-term strategic plan for the harbor. And I'm going to forget the second part of that, including a planning for national and regional economic downturns. Long-term strategic plan for the harbor. Well, how can that apply to goal one, item 10, continue to pursue an offshore wind farm development? Well, do we as a city have a long-term strategic plan for the wind farm development? I don't think so. We've got several departments that are picking away at it, and you know, I'm going to Washington, D.C. next month, and the mayor, and we've got a subcommittee that work with Castle Wind. But do we have a defined, published, but known strategic plan for that? I don't think we've really strategically planned it. So there's an opportunity. Let's come up with a strategic plan for figuring out how we're going to help this wind farm proposal move forward and these process move forward. We're, like I say, community development director's working on it, city manager's working on it, I'm working on it, mayor and some council people are working on it, but we don't really have a strategic plan for it. Maybe we should come up with a strategic plan. There's an opportunity, a strategic plan for helping the wind farm be realized. As an example, it's one of the ones I came up with. And I look at opportunities in that I was focusing mainly on the opportunity sections on goals one and two, because strengths are strengths, weaknesses are weaknesses. But opportunity, to me, speaks something new that we could possibly do. What can we do different? Really, strategic planning can be applied to any of these, you know, any of these items to try, and you should have some sort of a plan to implement any of these items. But that one came to the top of my head just on the wind farm one and a potential opportunity. Okay. The parking one is another one. That is, where'd that go? Goal two, item three, begin working on a parking management plan to address parking issues in the downtown waterfront area. You look at the opportunities we've got under goal two. Item C that we identified as one of the top three. Establish a city staff resources, holds sole responsibility is to pursue public-private funding for harbor infrastructure maintenance, repair, and improvement. Well, I didn't talk about parking specifically, but could you apply that to the parking issue? And I'm not saying it's the harbor department solely that would be involved with this, but as a city, could an opportunity be we figure out who on the city staff is responsibility is to pursue potential public-private opportunities for parking management or other opportunities for parking management. Right now, since it's in the harbor, it kind of falls on me and community development director, but do we want to look for, as a city, do we want to try and identify one person whose sole responsibility is and look for some public-private partnership opportunities? Stuff like that. That's kind of how I always looked at this.
Well, those are all good.
You kind of need to look at...
Those are all good examples.
Look at our SWOT SWOs and Ts that we identified. Mm-hmm. Look at our goals under each of those ones. They don't all apply, you know, they don't all mesh together perfectly, you know, one-to-one. Oh, that one goes with that one. That one goes with that one. You got to kind of morph them and mush them together and see if there's some opportunities. And then if there's a threat, you know, okay, there's a threat to... you know, what are our threats on goal one, item 10, which is the offshore wind? Well, goal one, threats, regional economic downturns. Well, not really. That's general fund extracting funds from Harvard. That's not really a threat against the offshore wind development. Losing sight of small town Morro Bay. Not so much. Any of the other ones can apply. Threats we might want to minimize. I don't really see anything that jumps out in there. So that was kind of my thought on those.
Okay. Okay.
And I don't think it's something we're going to do tonight.
No, but this is seven. But I have a couple of questions for Ms. McPherson. Based upon your earlier comments, are we correct in believing that the current goals, the council's current goals, and the ones we're talking about tonight, will be extant through mid-2021.
The goals will be. I don't know about the individual objectives. I think part of the process that we will go through is to see which ones have we accomplished, and therefore, for example, you are working on some of these, like the lease management policy, that'll be done. And so we might look for something else that you can then do that's your next priority to be working on. So we will make an assessment of which objectives have been accomplished and what are the new priorities that may still be under that same goal. The overall goal, you know, because it's the city is in dire straits of needing additional revenue sources across the board, all of the departments. So that will continue, I am sure, to be a major goal into the future. But some of the things that we've done, like the lease management policy, hopefully will increase revenues long term. That's just like the fee study. That we will have done that this year, so and we will have increased revenues through the fee study because we're increasing fees to recoup our costs. So we will, I'm sure, add new objectives, and the work plan will follow in that goal-setting process. And I'm sure that the goal number two will remain the same, too. We know we need to improve our public infrastructure. So I think the goals are likely to remain. We may add a goal. We added affordable housing to a goal this last time around. And we also expanded the public involvement goal as a priority goal. But the objectives will likely change.
Is there a difference between an objective and an action item? Or are they synonymous?
They're very similar, but the work plan itself would be, you know, laying it out over a period of time in terms of who's going to do what. It gets into more specifics about how that objective will be accomplished. So it lays out who's responsible and what are the milestones and when will it be done, et cetera.
So the document that I asked Lori to distribute to the HAB in support of this agenda item is a document that I've had since the last goal-setting process, and I just want to make sure that I'm referring to the correct thing. It's, as Lori just handed it to you, do you recognize that?
I do, not in this form, but yes, of course I recognize it.
I apologize. That, I mean, we're going to move forward with this. The Harbor Advisory Board is going to move forward with this, and I just want to make sure that we're doing something useful for the council. So what is described here as action items, action one through blah, blah,
right,
in that document, are those different? Is that a work plan action item, or is that just a different way of labeling council's objective under that goal?
These are the objectives. Yes, you may substitute action for objective. And then there are work plans associated with each one of these items.
Yes. Okay. Oh, good. Thank you. That's a clarity. Thank you. That's very useful.
Okay.
And given the results, as you have seen them, of the Harbor Advisory Board's SWOT analysis as it relates to the harbor, and given the council's current, by that I mean 19, 20, and into 21, presumably for a little while, goals and objectives, if you have thoughts about it, what can the Harbor Advisory Board do to apply the results of the analysis and the effort we put into that to council's current goals?
I don't know how to answer that question, to be honest with you. I think I would begin thinking about what you are working on and what you will be completing in this fiscal year that applied to your work plan and what you might be wanting to work on next. So, and there that SWOT analysis may very well help you. I think it's less helpful on what it can do for the current objectives. And I'm going to say objectives as opposed to goals, because the objectives get much more specific. And the goals are so general that it's very difficult to think of it that way. So I, from my point of view, and this is just my opinion, I would think you would be starting to think about, well, as you said, we will have done these two things, these three things. What's next to still further the same goals? And I think you're on the right track when you start to talk about the public improvement projects, the priority capital improvement projects you need to see, so that we have a list for that, which I know that Eric has a detailed list. At this point, you're limited in where the funding can come from for those capital improvement projects. Now, hopefully, if we can get more revenue into the city, we can use some general fund money to fund some of those. Currently, it's harbor fund money. So if you can think of other ways to raise money from your, given your area of responsibility, that would be very helpful to come up with those kinds of ideas and bring them forward in the next when we start making the specific objectives for the next fiscal year. Because okay. That's where your action planning will come from.
Okay.
And just to clarify, we're on a two-year goal cycle, so these four goals we have, existing goals, are going to carry through this year. The calendar and fiscal gets a little mixed up in that they're right. Two-year goals. I guess they're two-year fiscal goals, but these goals are going to carry and come this spring when we, Marla said, we're going to start looking at the objectives and to keep achieving the four goals. Is there anything new or different we're going to do? Some of them will be done, and we'll take them off the list, and that's where our whole work plan object process will weave into that. So,
well, now that's a useful commentary. So another useful commentary. Well, it would be really great for council to decide whether the goal setting thing is going to be calendar or fiscal. That would really be great.
Well, to be honest with you, it starts out on a fiscal basis, but then some of the projects aren't completed in the fiscal year, so they end up getting carried over, and hopefully they get completed in the calendar year. So it really, that's what happens. We carry over things that we don't finish when we've established them, and then have to replace with new ones.
But that's kind of a special class, the carryover ones.
You'd be surprised how often that
happens. I wouldn't be, but in terms of the process, the goal-setting process, isn't that sort of a discrete class? I mean, it was set for a period of time, and yes, we're going to carry that one on for a while, but it's not a new one.
Not the process itself. No, that is correct. So we will actually be working on the next fiscal year's goals when we do the goal-setting process, which will be in the first part of coming up soon. Or I should say in the next year.
Yeah, understood. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for all of that. Thank you. Here's what I would suggest we do two things to keep this moving forward. One of the things that we could do is create a consolidated statement of our prior recommendations that if that apply, if they do apply to the 19-20 goal action items, because we did them one at a time. We put them out one at a time, and some of them we could consolidate, and we could provide that to staff, and they can put that forward if they want to, or they can make it part of their plan. But anyway, for our own planning purposes. The other thing is that it's that now that I understand a little more what Eric had in mind, and given Ms. McPherson's explanation to us about the planning process, I think that we need to think about how we're going to move forward with these, with presuming, as she said, that these council goals are probably going to stay, the goals are going to stay the same. The objectives or the action items may not stay the same. In light of the work that we did for the SWOT. So I'm going to think about that a little bit. I'm going to ask Eric to think about it a little bit, and we'll come up with an agenda item for March.
Can I request that we get that information sooner than later?
Sooner than the Friday before the meeting?
Yep.
Absolutely. That's a good idea. Thank you. That's a great idea. Yeah. You don't want to put your life on hold just for 4 days?
No. My life doesn't want to be put on hold. Not that I don't want my life to be put on hold. My life doesn't go on
that's
hold.
That's a perfectly reasonable request. Okay. Anything else on this agenda item? No? Okay. Okay. So that brings us to... C, declaration of future agenda items. Does anybody want to declare a new future agenda item?
Can I ask one thing? We're supposed to decide on one less visit or one less meeting. Is that so? I know that we don't want to, but at what point do we make that decision? And if we have to, do we discuss what our... No, she said that... Marlis, you said that it doesn't necessarily have to be December.
No, that's correct. You can discuss the best month to that it could be. That's fine. I'm not sure how. I think Dana just picked that, and I'm not sure why. But we certainly did ask the Citizens Advisory Board when they wanted to do it, and they actually changed the month. So it's whatever makes the most sense to you.
In our particular case, it's going to be driven in no insignificant part by that seat, by the commercial fisherman's seat. So what I think I'll do is I'll start with those folks and see what their thoughts are, because we want, it's a very important, in my opinion, it's very important for that seat to have the maximum continuity that it can in terms of its representation. So we'll start with that one and kind of see where that takes us. And then we'll, without having a serial meeting in contradiction of the Brown Act, we'll have we'll figure it out.
Well, ultimately, do we need to go ask? So we're going to have to, do we have to have the council approve it formally? Or are we just...
No, I don't think we have to, okay. But I mean, I would assume you'd want to agendize that for yourself to discuss it and then just inform the council. You can just let us know. It can be on consent, and it's just straightforward. As long as it doesn't conflict with some other meeting or, you know, as long as you can all agree on it, that's fine.
Yeah, that's where I was going. I think we need to future agendize it.
Everybody
can think about it, and you can do some polling, but ultimately we decide in a meeting, and hopefully the next meeting, depending on when we want to have our third month off.
So, Charisse, why don't you, if you feel so inclined, make a motion that we for a future agenda item to talk about our meeting schedule.
I make a motion to agendize our future meeting schedule.
I second it.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion? Discussion?
I just had a question. So would it be possible or is it prudent to leave one of the three meetings floating?
We can't discuss that right now.
Oh, okay.
We can discuss it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But hold that question. Hold that question and we'll discuss it. Okay, any other discussion on this motion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Carries. Any other future agenda items that anyone would like to declare? Okay. Motion to adjourn.
I so moved to adjourn.
Wow. Okay. Any discussion? None. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you.